Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into something pretty fundamental in contract law, the Battle of the Forms.
Right. It sounds dramatic, but it's a really common issue when businesses exchange, you know, their standard documents.
Exactly. Like purchase orders and acknowledgments. And to really get a handle on it, we're going to look closely at a key case, Gardner Zemke Co. v. Dun & Bush, Inc.
Yes. A great case from 93 New Mexico Supreme Court. It's fantastic for showing how the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC, changed things.
Changed things from the older common law rules.
Precisely. It moved away from that really strict mirror image rule, especially for sales of goods. UCC Section 2207 really shook things up.
Okay, so maybe first, why is this battle even a thing? Why is it such a big deal?
Well, think about it. Business A sends a purchase order. It has their terms. Business B sends back an acknowledgement form. Surprise. It has their terms. And they often don't match up perfectly.
Happens all the time, I bet.
Constantly. And under the old common law mirror image rule, if that acknowledgement wasn't exactly the same as the offer.
It wasn't an acceptance.
Nope. It was a counteroffer. A whole new offer. Which often meant whoever sent the last form before performance started got their terms in. Kind of a last shot advantage.
That seems potentially unfair.
It could be. That's why UCC 2207 was created specifically for sales of goods. Remember, to make things more, well, practical and fair. The UCC is basically a standardized rulebook for these kinds of deals across the U.S.
Got it. So let's use Gardner Zemke to see how this plays out. What happened there?
Okay, so Gardner Zemke was a contractor. They needed some big air conditioning chillers for a project.
Right.
They sent a purchase order to Dun & Bush, the supplier. And Gardner's order wasn't just, you know, send us chillers. It had specifics.
Like what?
Like a one-year warranty they clearly expected. Mm-hmm. And they also included terms about specific performance, basically saying, if you don't deliver properly, we can force you to.
Okay, pretty clear expectations from Gardner. What did Dun & Bush do?
They sent back their own standard form, an acknowledgement.
Yeah.
And here's where the battle lines are drawn.
Because their terms were different.
Exactly. Dun & Bush's form had warranty disclaimers, essentially saying, we're not promising these things work exactly like you might hope, and our liability is limited. Big difference from Gardner's expected warranty.
Okay, that's a major conflict. Oh. Anything else?
Oh, yeah. Their form also had a clause basically stating that their terms were the only ones that mattered. And here's the kicker.
Oh.
Their form said that if Gardner didn't object, if they just stayed silent, that silence would count as accepting Dun & Bush's terms.
Wow. So despite these totally different documents, what happened next? Did the deal fall apart?
Nope. And this is super common, too. Both sides just proceeded. Dun & Bush shipped the chillers.
And Gardner's MP paid for them.
Yep. They paid.
Great.
But then the chillers didn't work properly. They failed.
Ah, okay. So Gardner goes back and says, hey, what about that warranty?
Exactly. They expected repairs under the warranty they thought they had, but Dun & Bush pushed back.
How so?
They basically said, we'll only look at repairs if the end client pays extra and only if we don't find any actual defects, not exactly honoring a warranty.
Right. So Gardner Zemke sued.
You got it. Sued for breach of contract, which leads us right to the core legal question.
Which was Dun & Bush's form a counteroffer that Gardner accepted by taking the chillers? Or was it an acceptance of Gardner's original offer, just with some different terms thrown in?
That's the million-dollar question. And the answer lies in UCC Section 2207. This whole section is designed for this mess.
Okay, break down 2207 for us. What's the key part?
The absolute starting point is subsection 1. It says that a response to an offer like Dun & Bush's acknowledgement can act as an acceptance, even if it has additional or different terms compared to the offer.
Even with different warranties, and that our terms control language.
Yes, unless, and this is crucial, unless the acceptance is expressly made conditional on the original offeror agreeing to those new or different terms.
Expressly conditional. What does that actually mean? Like, how explicit do they have to be?
It means the response has to essentially say, look, we are only willing to make this deal IF, and only IF you agree to our specific new terms. It can't just be hinted at or buried in boilerplate. It needs to be really clear.
So the UCC is saying, we assume you have a deal if you act like you have a deal, unless someone very clearly draws a line in the sand.
That's a great way to put it. It recognizes business reality. People use forms. They don't always read every line, but they intend to contract. So 2207 finds a contract unless the acceptance is basically an ultimatum. My terms or no deal.
And in Gardner Zemke, The court looked at Dunham Bush's form.
And decided it didn't meet that high standard. It wasn't expressly conditional.
Even with the language saying their terms controlled.
Right. The court felt it wasn't clear enough to make the entire deal contingent on Gardner explicitly accepting those disclaimers. It sounded more like Dunham Bush just stating their preference, not making it an absolute condition for the contract's existence.
Okay, so if Dunham Bush's form was an acceptance under 2207, but it had different terms, what happens to those conflicting terms, like the warranties?
Ah, now we move to another part of 2207, specifically subsection 3.
What does subsection 3 do?
It handles the situation where conduct by both parties, like shipping and accepting the goods, shows that a contract exists, even though the written forms don't agree on all terms. In that case, the contract consists of the terms they did agree on.
Okay.
And any conflicting terms basically get knocked out. They cancel each other out.
So Gardner's warranty term and Dunham Bush's disclaimer, they just disappear.
Poof. Gone, because they directly conflict.
So what's left regarding the warranty? Is there just no warranty?
No, not necessarily. This is where the UCC's gap filler provisions come in. The UCC has built-in default rules for common things like warranties.
Like implied warranties.
Exactly. When the party's specific terms knock each other out, the UCC might fill the gap with things like the implied warranty of merchantability, meaning the goods should be fit for their ordinary purpose.
So even though Dunham Bush tried to disclaim warranties because their form wasn't an expressly conditional acceptance, their disclaimer got knocked out, and Gardner might still get the benefit of a UCC implied warranty.
That's the logic the New Mexico Supreme Court followed. They said the trial court got it wrong.
How did the trial court get it wrong?
The trial court actually used the old common law last shot rule. They said Dunham Bush's form was a counteroffer, and Gardner accepted it by taking the chillers. They bought into Dunham Bush's silence equals acceptance clause.
But the Supreme Court said, no, this is a sale of goods. Use the UCC.
Precisely. They emphasized that UCC 2207 applies, and under its analysis, the conflicting warranty terms were out, and UCC gap fillers would likely apply. Big difference in outcome.
Okay, so boiling it down, what did Gardner Zemke really establish? Is there, like, a test?
Yeah, you can think of it as a two-step analysis emerging from cases like this.
Okay.
First, was the acceptance truly expressly conditional? Did it use clear, unambiguous language saying, no deal unless you agree to my terms?
And the bar for that is pretty high.
Very high. Just saying, our terms control usually isn't enough.
Great.
Second.
What was the second step?
Look at the context. What did the parties do? Did they act like they had a contract? What's normal in their industry? In Gardner Zemke, the fact they shipped, accepted, and paid strongly suggested they both believed a deal was made, despite the forms.
So actions speak louder than forms, unless the form is a very clear ultimatum.
That's a good summary. The commercial context and the party's conduct are really important under the UCC approach.
So if Dunham Bush had put something like, warning, this acceptance is expressly conditional on buyer's assent to the warranty disclaimers herein. Proceeding with this transaction signifies such assent. Would that have worked?
Ah, now you're getting closer. That kind of explicit conditional language is much more likely to be seen as making the acceptance expressly conditional under 2207, potentially turning it into a counteroffer. It leaves less room for doubt.
This seems critical for lawyers drafting these forms, then.
Yeah,
absolutely critical. If you're drafting for a seller and they absolutely need their limited warranty or liability clause to stick, you cannot rely on just putting it in the form.
You need that expressly conditional language.
You need language making it crystal clear that your client's willingness to proceed is dependent on the other side accepting those specific terms. Otherwise, you risk 2207 thracking them out and letting UCC gap fillers in, which might be way worse for your client.
So, no hiding the ball. Be upfront if a term is a deal breaker.
Exactly. The UCC tries to prevent unfair surprise. It discourages winning the battle simply by firing the last shot or having sneaky terms. It focuses on the actual reasonable commercial expectations.
So for law students listening, what's the number one thing to remember when they see offer and acceptance forms flying back and forth?
First question always, is this about the sale of goods? If yes, sirens should go off in your head, UCC Article 2, and specifically think 2207.
Ditch the common law mirror image rule as the first step.
Right. Start with the UCC framework. It's designed for this specific commercial reality. Is there an acceptance under 2207? Was it expressly conditional? If not, how do subsections 2 or 3 handle the additional or different terms.
Subsection 2, we didn't talk much about that.
Right. Subsection 2 deals with additional terms in the acceptance, rather than different or conflicting ones. Between merchants, those additional terms generally become part of the contract unless the offer limited acceptance to its terms, the new terms materially alter the deal, or the offer objects. Subsection 3 is more for when terms directly clash.
Okay, so 2207 has different paths depending on whether terms are just added or if they actually conflict.
Correct. But the big picture, reinforced by Gardner Zemke, is moving away from rigid formalism towards what's commercially reasonable. Did the parties intend a deal? If so, the UCC provides rules to sort out the details fairly, avoiding the arbitrary outcomes of the first shot or last shot rules.
It really prioritizes finding a contract if the parties act like there is one.
Yes, and then sorting out the messy details of the forms using UCC rules, often leading to the application of those gap fillers. It's about commercial reality.
This has been super helpful in understanding the Battle of the Forms, 2207, and how Gardner Zemke applies it. Really clarifies that UCC approach.
It's a cornerstone concept. Understanding 2207 is vital for anyone dealing with commercial contracts for goods. Gardner Zemke just illustrates it so well.
All right, so as we wrap up, here's something to chew on. We live in an increasingly digital world. Deals made online, click-through agreements, standardized terms, varied in links. How do you think UCC 2207, especially that expressly conditional requirement, might apply or need to adapt in that context? Are digital acceptances different?
That is a fascinating question and definitely where the law is evolving. How clear does that condition need to be in an online format? It's something courts are grappling with.
Definitely food for thought. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.